In a series of Mishnayos, a whole slew of Mishnayos from Rabbi Akiva near the end of the third parak. More than one is very poetic. All of Pirkei Avos is poetic, but I think here it's particularly striking. I'd like to maybe take a look at the Mishnayos stand on their own, the various Mishnayos stand on their own, and there are certain threads that are common, some obvious and some inobvious. Maybe we'll have a chance to take a look at it. I would love tonight to look particularly at the way the Rambam and Rav Chaim Volozhiner analyze these Mishnayos. The Rambam's Perish is a little bit easier to get your hand on. Rav Chaim Volozhiner's Perish is a little bit more Yikara Metzias. I happen to have a copy at home of Nefesh HaChaim, which is Rav Chaim Volozhiner's famous work on Kabbalah and philosophy and the role of Talmud Torah and Kesher HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then at the end, they put that together with Chaim Volozhiner's Ruach Chaim, which is comments on Pirkei Avos from Chaim Volozhiner. They tell you on the Sharblat, it's actually, well, it wasn't written as a Perush. This is notes that were taken. Apparently, he used to say Pirkei Avos here in Shul. So they tell you here. Adori Shabbos b'Shabbato. He used to give Pirkei Avos here every Shabbos, and it was written down. It does not seem like it was prepared for publication during his lifetime. They write in the Sharblat that the name Ruach Chaim was a name that was given to it by his son, Rabbi Itzel Volozhiner. Nefesh HaChaim was published by Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner during his lifetime. Ruach Chaim, Nefesh and Ruach, have different, not synonyms, but parallel terms for different aspects of the Neshama. So the parallelism is clear. I think this was meant... Nefesh HaChaim is very, very, often very esoteric. This Ruach Chaim was delivered in Shul. I think it was meant for a broader, more popular audience. And it's sometimes very, very creative approaches to Pirkei Avos. And then this edition of Ruach Chaim is paired with this Sefer Mayana Yehoshua. Trying to figure out here, it seems like this Yeshua Heschel is either a grandson or a great-grandson of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. So he is sort of like an organized, a methodical approach to Pirkei Avos. So maybe I have a chance to take a peek at that as well. So let's take a look at the Mishnayos. Seth points out that different printings of Pirkei Avos have different...
numbering schemes?
Yeah, different numbering schemes, because... some break it down to more Mishnayos, some to fewer. So let's say I'm looking here at the two editions. So in one, in the Ruach Chaim edition, so Rabbi Akiva begins Mishnah Gimel. In the Rav Kapach edition of the Rambam, Rabbi Akiva begins Tes Zayin. So off by three. So however, I think everyone, I could be wrong in this two, but I think the different editions I was looking at all present Rabbi Akiva's material as four Mishnayos. Do you have that also? Okay, whatever number you're starting with.
13 through 16.
And you also have 13 through 16?
17, 18, 19, 20.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's the exact edition. Okay. So whatever it is, we'll call them either starting Mishnah Gimel, Tezayin, Yudzayin, but Mishnah is 1, 2, 3, and 4 of Rabbi Akiva. So the first is sort of get a bird's eye view, and then we'll dig in. In the first Mishnah, the first of the four Mishnah is Rabbi Akiva. The schok v'kalas rosh magilin le'erva, being too lightheaded, being too disinhibited, can be margil le'erva, can open one up, can make one feel more familiar with, ultimately with arayos, with the most severe of sins. And then he talks about different siyagim. Masoros is a siyag, which we assume is a gzera, a sort of a fence to prevent you from getting somewhere else. So in this case, it sounds like things that help you. Masoros will get you to Torah, taking a nedra will get you to more self-control, to precious, and siyag l'chach mashtika, picking up on what we saw 2 weeks ago in the first parak, that quiet will often bring you to chachma. So that's the first mishnah, is these four siyagim, or is for recognize these four things, you avoid chok kalosh, you avoid erva, and so on and so forth. The second mishnah, so he talks about tzel melokim, and banu l'makom. Man is precious. It's tzel melokim. Chaviv in Yisrael, Baron Lamakam. There were Jewish people have a unique specialness, uniquely cherished in being called children of Ribbono Shel Olam. And the third Mishnah opens with Hakol. We'll have to look at this carefully. Hakol Safui or Shus Nasuna, that everything is foreseen. Everything is seen by Kodesh Baruch Hu. At the same time, we have Bechira Chafshus. And then the fourth Mishnah, finally, is this, the Hu Haya Omer. Hu Haya Omer, this elaborate mashal of likening life to a commercial situation. People buying and selling and collecting debts, and that's a mashal for life. So let's say, so again, the four Mishnayos. The first one, the Siyagim, and then the Chaviv Adam, the preciousness of man, preciousness of Jews, and then the Kodesh Baruch Hu's, sounds like Kodesh Baruch Hu's foreknowledge, and finally, the Mashal, the retail Mashal. So let's go one by one, and we'll see what the Ram has to say, what Chayav Elazar has to say, and we'll also see as over the course of these Mishnayos, certain threads that will tie things together. So in the first Mishnah, again, let's take a look inside. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Schok v'kal shrosh magilin l'erva, so being too unwound, so that can bring a person to erva. I believe the Mesillas Yesharim comments that I mean, he talks Parakeh. Mesillas Yesharim Parakeh is the end of his treatment. The first Mesillas Yesharim is built as a ladder around the organizing scheme of Mesillas Yesharim is really meant to be a practical guide to self improvement. Organizing those agados, he writes in an essay that the essay categorizing different types of agados. Mesillas Yesharim seeks to take those agados which are Musar and practical self-improvement, and organize them into a practical framework. And he takes as his organizing scheme a single agadah in Maseches Avodah Zarah. It talks about sort of a step-by-step progression, what many have called the ladder, like the ladder of Yaakov Avinu. Sula Murtzav Arzav Rosh Magia Shemaim, the ladder is rooted on the ground, the feet ladder on the ground, that the top ladder reaches up to Shemaim. It sort of takes you from ABCs, from basic first steps of self-improvement, all the way up to Ruach HaKodesh Tchiyas HaMeisim. That's based on a brisa of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair, Maseches Avodah Zarah, where he does exactly that. He says, A, you start with this Midah A, Zehiras Litzis, the Rizus, the Nakiyas, and step by step. In talking about the first step, which is Zehiras, the Rambam understands, Mesillas Yesharim defines Zehiras not as being careful, but as being thoughtful, being contemplative. It talks about rational decision-making, so prospectively thinking things through in advance, and thinking things through based on first principles, based on core values, instead of just sort of acting, or instead of acting based on transient concerns. And he also talks about Zahiros, sort of the thoughtful, contemplative living, retrospectively in terms of taking stock and carving out time from doing to consider and make a cheshva nefesh from time to time. So that's right. Mesillas Yesharim develops the idea at some length. This is really the first step to any real self-improvement, is to begin to stop and think from time to time. To live thoughtfully, to live contemplatively. And he closes, as he typically does, because it's a practical sefer, each step, this is step one, first meet the zehiros, for each of the midos in the sefer, he'll give you a sort of a thumbnail portrait of what it is, then give a more detailed and now a breakdown, unpacking what the different parts are, and then he'll talk about how can I acquire it, and what are the pitfalls, possible pitfalls I need to avoid. So, and talk about the possible pitfalls to developing zehiros, which are really the major obstacles to beginning to live, to begin a program of serious self-improvement, to live ambitiously and with religious ambition. So he identifies three roadblocks. The first one, he says, is just being too busy. Life gets so busy, you just don't have the chance to think. It's always on the chest. Says, the Yetzer knows the Yetzer of Paro, right? And when Paro is concerned about Moshe's initial initial requests. So what does he say? Tich baravo, just give them work. Just don't give them the chance to think. But then he says, you know, so that's the most global. So the Shem says, everyone gets too busy. But it's also something that it's easiest to work around. If I can get a handle on my schedule, if I can figure out a way to build in blocks of time that are going to be set aside for self-reflection, maybe I can make headway. But he says what's less easily dealt with is when it's not just a question of being too busy, but tzchok l'kalas rosh, what Rabbi Akiva opens up with. And tzchok, he points out, tzchok doesn't mean being happy. Tzchok means, tzchok v'latzon. Latzon in particular, he understands as a sarcasm. Or I should say, maybe more precisely, cynicism. So being unable to take things seriously. Just always having to, anything of substance is said, you have to just come back with a line. Just sort of cutting everything down and never being able to just cherish something. Never been able to just appreciate something has value. And he writes, you know, don't think that that's a small thing. Tzchok v'kalas rosh, margilin l'erva. If I get into this rut where there always has to be a response to everything, everything has to be cut down, and certainly there are plenty of things, it's true, there are loads of things in life that people give too much value to, and people ascribe too much importance to. But the opposite of being cynicism is the other extreme. It's to think everything is wonderful, to look at life with overly rosy glasses, and just to think everything is lovely. The solution is not to go to the other extreme and think everything is horrific. The solution is to be a realist and to understand there are things of importance, there are things that are not so important. He says if it is an automatic response of Lutzon, so then I can't take anything seriously. To the extent, as Misha says, Schok v'kalas rosh margirin l'erva. You'll get to the point where even erva, which any religious person understands is of extraordinary significance, it'll be margil, that's the word the Mishnah uses, it'll slowly become familiar. It'll begin to erode even those things which you hold most dear. That's the power of the negative power of that sort of attitude. So that seems like a very classic siyag. The person's going to allow himself to wallow in cynicism and to wallow in never taking anything seriously, either is from a cynical way, lots of smoke, everything's just a joke, maybe in a more harmless, friendly way, but everything is a joke. So you're opening yourself up to untold religious dangers. The other three are interesting. These are positive uses of the term siyag. Masores siyag la Torah. Masores is either a sense of value for masora, or as the Rambam seems to say, mishmeres hamitzvos, keeping halacha. Keeping halacha siyag la Torah. Nedarim siyag la Prishus. Taking nedarim well is a way to cultivate a healthy sense of restraint, and being quiet can enable me to become a far wiser person.
So when it says masos siyag losher, that's not following a ser b'shloshet yisasher. In other words, we say siyag. Siyag is.
That's fascinating. The older editions of the Mishnah don't have that line here.
Uh-huh.
The edition I'm looking at, I think this is what you're looking at also. Yeah. Right. Master Siyag L'Osha, but in the Vilna edition that you're looking at, what you're looking at is based on, your Master Siyag L'Osha also is a positive thing. You're saying if you engage in Masros, then that will lead you to a positive outcome of Osha. Now the Rambam has an interesting line. He talks about, actually, we'll come back to Rambam soon. The Reb Chaim V'Loshin and Reb Chaim, a number of Mepharshim wonder, like, why these siyagim? There's so many. There's so much causality. This is examples of causality, human psychological causality. You do A and lead you to B. What's special about these? So Reb Chaim V'Loshin has an interesting comment. What he says, these are all examples of surprising not just recognizing causality, but recognizing surprising causality. He says the way you might think, so that's why there are fences. He says you might think I'm working so hard on the garden. Just want to work on the garden. Just want to spend more time planting and hoeing and to build a fence. How does it help anything grow? But the truth is, even though it may seem like a waste of time, it's actually incredibly important. It's a surprising assist. So he says, for instance, maser. So he says, you would think that you take maser, you make yourself poor. Yet it helps. As you would think it actually would hurt. It says, taking a neder. Taking a neder, the truth is, in Dar, we usually discourage. People who don't appreciate the power of speech, taking a neder is a terrible thing. The Gemara says, you're taking a neder, it's like building a bama. Building a bama, a bama is a mizbeach outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Even though it may be intended for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to shech the carbon, to offer on a bama, since the days of Shlomo, is a heinous avera, as a chiv kares. Building a bama, you haven't done the avera yet, but you're setting yourself up, you're creating a situation that lends itself to heinous chet. The Gemara says, it's called noder ki ilu bana bama. A fellow takes a neder, it's like you're setting up a situation where things go so terribly awry. We generally highly discourage them. Yet, he says, but in the used well, it could actually lead me to greater appreciation. Judiciously, so the Mesillas Sharm talks about, he talks later in the Sefer about the importance of a Jew making siyagim, the usual sense of siyagim for himself. When Chazal makes Zeris, those are Xeris that were applicable to the mass of Jews. But the understanding is, they're making Xeris on the national level, but everyone leads his own life, and everyone has his own situations, each person has a personal profile of which things are hard, which Averis are harder for me, which Nisyonis are more or less difficult, and each person has his own set of situations. So Ramchal writes, it's understood that every person has to supplement the national Xeris made by Chazal with personal Xeris. So used well, I know particular situations trigger me. In a particular spot with a particular person, I know that I'm likely to commit some chet. I'm a chaver, but I'm a makom, whatever it might be. So maybe I have to make my own siyagim tailored to me, tailored to my needs, tailored to my realities, in order to make sure that I keep the same tariq mitzvahs that everyone else needs to keep. So he says, look, used well, carefully implemented, a neder could actually build appreciation. A neder could be an incredibly positive thing. And he says, even shtika, siyag l'chachma shtika. And usually you think that the more you talk, the more you learn, and the more you engage in conversation. But yet sometimes we know that ironically, to hold back, one ends up learning more. Doesn't mean that no one should ask questions during the year, of course. But there are situations. That's the case. Okay.
Well, so if the four siyagim, right, are a prescription of sorts to the beginning of the Mishnah, so if somebody's running their mouth off a little bit too much, then perhaps for that individual, siyag lachach mashtika, that might be the answer.
Oh, interesting.
Right, that may be the way, you know, somebody who may be just a little too chatty, you know, that's a little bit of a, take a step back a little bit.
Interesting. You're saying there's an intertwining between the different items of the Mishnah. The last item in the Mishnah, last siyag takes you back to the first one. That is definitely possible. Yeah, it's an interesting point. It's a very interesting point. And I would tell you one more thing. Going back to the beginning, this Chok Kalas Rosh, so it's interesting how Bekiva begins with that. That's the first thing he says. So I'd say from the Mesillas Yesharim standpoint, that is one of the opening issues. Chaim Volozhiner says that Rabbi Akiva, he thinks, is responding to his contemporary in the previous Mishnah. Rabbi Shmuel had said, having the Kabbalists called them b'simcha, said, you should, you know, not just b'seder parmiyafa, it's not just to be friendly and civil with people, but to be incredibly happy with other, around other people. The Bikiva said, yes, it's very important to be b'simcha with other people, but make sure that's done wisely. Make sure that's done in a healthy and appropriate way. Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner's grandson or great-grandson, Yeshua Heschel, see, he, I mentioned before, he, they have, they open here with a short sefer by him, Mayana Yehoshua, in which he seeks to show certain patterns in Mishnayos. And he identifies, I think, five different patterns with numerous examples for each. So, for instance, he talks about, number one, is he talks about how many Mishnayos to Pirkei Avos. One of the overarching questions is, why is this Tana the one who's saying this particular idea? So he begins with a whole slew of Mishnayos, which, to his understanding, the Tana is speaking to the issues of the time. Ligdor Gedel Adoro. That generation particularly needed this message. Presumably there's eternal meaningfulness, and that's why it made it to Pirkei Avos forever. And then he has a second group of Mishnayos that speak to an event that happened to that Tana. This was like a response, something happened in his life. And then the third one is he has a series of Mishnayos where Tanam speak about meters that they personally had specialized in. The fourth one, he talks about a series of Mishnayos where the Tanam point out that the importance of detail. Whereas you're doing something basic, right, but one detail's off, that could throw everything off. So he makes a suggestion. This Rabbi Yeshua Heschel, that Rabbi Akiva, the Schok V'Kalas Rosh, this actually is Rabbi Akiva talking about himself. It's Rabbi Akiva responding to his own midah, because Rabbi Akiva is an incredibly happy man. I think this is something we've discussed in the past. The Rav develops this concept of interesting to see in print from someone else. He says, he lines up many of the Gemara at the end of Makkos, where he's, everyone was crying, he's laughing.
He's an optimistic person.
Right, incredibly optimistic. And he's the one who, again, picks, like the Rav pointed out in the famous Drasha, right, his candidate for Mashiach is killed, his yeshiva falls apart, and he dusts himself off, picks himself up, and goes back. Again, that's one of the main themes of Iyar, in between the Pesach Sheni and Lag BaOmer, and Yom Ha'atzmaut Yom Yerushalayim. And one of the major themes throughout Chodesh Iyar is the ability to... the value in people being proactive, from Pesach Sheni to Rabbi Akiva rebuilding Lag BaOmer to Yom Ha'atzmaut Yom Yerushalayim. So he says Rabbi Akiva was a man of incredible simcha. I never thought about this before I read that comment. Right? Meeting Rabbi Akiva, he must have been like the man with a twinkle in his eye, in the best sense. Like, it's like so happy. He says it wasn't just Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva was this incredibly positive person. So friendly and so happy. But he said, but do it well. Do it right. Don't let the happiness become just sort of like a levity and a over-familiarity that can breed a lack of sneers. Schok v'kalas rosh magim l'erva. I'm the first person to speak about importance to be happy, but you got to do it right. You got to do it right. Yes, you're going to be incredibly happy. You're going to be incredibly friendly with people, but you won't spend too much time schmoozing with someone else's spouse. It needs to be done thoughtfully. And then we move on to the next Mishnah. The Chavav Adam should never tell him. Chaviv Yisrael should nikur b'am l'makom. That's interesting. The Mishnah here sounds like it's talking about major issues of philosophy. The Rambam actually focuses on a different angle, strikingly. The Mishnah sounds like it's talking about the balance that the covenant of Bria is for every human being. And our Masorah recognizes that every Tzem Elokim is something the Chumash describes in the Bria Sadam. It's not something unique to Jews. It's not something unique to any particular type of person. All of humanity is blessed by a Kaddish Baruch Hu with Tzem Elokim. Chavav Adam Shenever B'Tzalem. And that's something that the Tzem Elokim is something many Sfarim try to understand clearly. It's not literally, doesn't mean that we have eyes, nose, and mouth like Kadosh Baruch Hu does. The Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have a body. It refers to something far less obvious and far, far, far more significant in hands and feet. It presumably refers to the fact that we have a mitzvah, which itself is a metaphor, to walk in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way, v'alachta bedrachav, to be b'tzelam elokim, doesn't mean that we're physically in the tzelam of a Ribono Shel Olam. It means we have, far more significantly, the ability to model ourselves after HaKadosh Baruch Hu, despite the fact that we're physical creatures, and we're finite creatures, and Ribono Shel Olam is an infinite creator, but yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the incredible gift of the ability to, in some, albeit imperfect human way, model ourselves after HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can be like Hashem. And that's what we mean when we talk about Tzelem Elokim, Tzelem Elokim Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu implanted, endowed us with that gift, that ability to, in some way, be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is really a remarkable, remarkable paradoxical endowment.
Right. So, it's a sense of creativity, the ability to improve.
Right, so exactly. So it's Rav and Halachic Man, the second section of Halachic Man, really is about that. Exactly what you mentioned, Jake. He talks about the Rama writes in the first two chapters of Hilchos Deos about the array of nidos that we seek to improve. And Rama understands that the whole range of character development really falls under the rubric of the mitzvah of Halachta B'Drachav. And Rama writes all the descriptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout Tanakh in human, imperfect human descriptions. I mean, we describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu in human terms, which by definition is a profoundly imperfect description. Rama writes, but the major goal of those descriptions is to give us a sense of what we can do as humans that will, in some human way, parallel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rav and Halachic Man picks up what you said. He talks about how one of the most basic things you can say about HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that he is the ultimate in creativity. He's the Borei Olam. He created everything from nothing. We're not going to create Yesh Me'ayin. We're going to create ex nihilo. Humans create Yesh Me'yesh, but to the extent that a person can be creative, the Rav writes, it's one of the most profound expressions of Halachta B'Drachav. And that's something that's open to any human being, and at the same time, Chavivin Yisrael Shenikru Ba'al Makom. We proudly say there is something special and unique about being Jewish, and it's Nikru Ba'al Makom. The Chumash describes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes in the Chumash as children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which presumably means that the Tzelem Elokim comes more naturally. That any human being has the ability to model himself or herself after HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to develop character, to develop midos in that way, but that we have the easiest access. It comes most, it's most natural for a Jew. We'll have a certain kinship, as it were, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Baruch Lakam, we're related to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Mishnah goes on to say, Chaviv Yisrael Shnitim Kli Chemda. We were given the precious tool of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Being Baal Makam goes hand in hand with having been given, being given HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. So the focus is really on these issues, and yet what's fascinating is that the Rambam chooses in his Perish to focus instead on what seems at first like a side topic, which is the Mishnah mentions, you know, Chavav Adam, Tzelem Elokim, you know, Chavivin Yisrael, that we have the Torah, Kli Chemda. The Mishnah seems to repeat it. Chibi Yaseira, there's an added degree of love, of cherishing, that we, HaKadosh Baruch Hu let us know that we have Tzelem Elokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu let us know that we have the Torah. So the Rama focused on that. So like that's an aspect of Midos, to let people know the gifts that they have. Because too often we don't recognize that. And if I gave someone a gift, there's a balance to be struck between being modest and not, you know, bragging, but at the same time, people should know what the gift. 12% people need to be notified of the gifts that they have. And then we move to the last.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So, it just seems like a strange thing for the Rambam to say, because it sounds like he's saying. It sounds like he's saying that. You need to know, it's good. It's a good thing if a person is told how much good is being done for him, because if somebody doesn't tell him, then it could be that it's being nice because they feel bad for him.
Right.
So that, I mean, I guess I can see that possibility, but is that the normal, every time someone does something nice to you, there's the doubt that maybe he's just doing it. I mean, it doesn't seem like fundamental thing. Like somebody invites me over to their home, it could be that they're inviting me just because they feel bad for me, they're afraid I have no place to go. But usually, you know, you assume they invite you over because they genuinely want to be nice and they genuinely want you to go.
Yeah. And then it sounds like he's talking about the it's a subtlety. you invite someone over to the house, they know that you're inviting them to your house. People, when I do a chesed for someone, I don't even let them know. So I may just be trying to be friendly, but I have to sort of be attuned to the subtlety that it may, number one, it may impact the person if he finds out about it later. I'm just trying to be good. I'm just trying to do the right thing. But I need to sort of look down and play the long game and recognize if he finds out later that I was helping him without his knowledge, it may make him feel I was trying to be helpful, but he may feel like a nebuch. Right? So that's what he says. Right? If I don't, whereas if I'm up front, so I'm helping you out. I'm helping you out. Our friends help each other. But to think about how things may, sort of those unintended consequences, which in a sense sort of speaks a little bit to that awareness of the unintended and the awareness of sort of the surprising things play themselves out, in a sense picks up on the thread that Mechai Velazhner had seen in the first Mishnah. These siyagim are sort of recognizing the sort of causal chains that you don't expect to find. But another, so that's one thread. And another thread is sort of this Rambam sort of honing in on the midos aspect of a mission that seems like it's more deos and philosophy than tikkun midos, is something that comes to even greater expression in the previous Mishnah and the coming Mishnah. The next Mishnah, the Rambam, is a very fascinating opening line for the Mishnah, for the third Mishnah. Really, the third and fourth Mishnah in many ways go together. He says, you should know this Mishnah, Bavazu Kolos, and Yanam Gedol Mo. This Mishnah is about to, you know, address major issues. And he has a fascinating line. The Ein Roy Kadvar Ma'ela El Rabbi Kiva. This sort of thing could only be, it would only be appropriate for someone like Rabbi Kiva to say this. Now, I'm not sure, and I think there's more than one way to read that line of the Rambam. He may mean that Rabbi Kiva was an unusually broad and profound Talmud Chacham, even among, if you can even say such a thing, even among the other Tanaim. It's hard to, you know, how can we look up at size skyscrapers and compare which one is taller? But the Gemara does it, because the Gemara talks about, Gemara in the Chagiga, talks about this very esoteric part of Kabbalah. According to most Rishonim, it's a part of Kabbalah. So Hagos Maimoni, at the end of Perek Davi, so the Torah quotes from Haigon, the Pardes, the garden, the orchard, is some type of deep Kabbalistic meditation. Rambam has a different way. Rambam thinks it's a very deep type of philosophical understanding. Gemara, whatever it is, the Gemara says that there were four Tanaim who went into Pardes. One died as a result of that experience. One went insane. One lost his amuna. And only Rabbi Kiva, of these four great men, only Rabbi Kiva was nichnas b'sham v'yatzah b'sham. That's an unusual statement. And we have other Mamari Chazal talk about the sort of the unique place Rabbi Kiva had in terms of the Masor of Halacha. In fact, when I describe him, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, putting Moshe Rabbeinu temporarily into Rabbi Kiva's shir to see what learning would look like of all the time to make chavim of the millennia, Rabbi Kiva. But here you sort of get the sense of Rabbi Kiva's godless in Kabbalah. And Kabbalah and philosophy, however you understand parties, very uniquely so. So Rama might mean that only Rabbi Kiva was a man of such incredible stature and learning that he could say such a thing. Or maybe he means that Rabbi Kiva himself lived this story. Because the Mishnah focuses on, and particularly according to Rambam, is Bechir HaChavshas. The Mishnah says, HaKol Tzafui, or Rishus Nesuna. The Rambam speaks at length here, and in the fifth chapter of Hilchos Tshuva, about how he directly opens the parak with the language of this Mishnah. And Rambam understands that the Mishnah is presenting a paradox. The Kadosh Baruch Hu knows in advance what's going to happen, while at the same time gives us Bechir HaChavshas. Now the truth is, not everyone reads the Mishnah that way. Chaim Velazhner says, HaKol Tzafui means the Kadosh Baruch Hu knows when I'm doing the Aveira, he sees me doing the Aveira, yet allows me to continue to operate. He doesn't stop me. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives me a chance to sort of a focus on the chesed of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu, such a chutzpah. You're using the life that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you to do the opposite of what he wants you to do? Kodesh Baruch Hu could have stopped me right there. But no, he lets me carry on. He gives me the Chir Chavshus, and I'll have a chance to do the tshuva later. But for the Rambam, it's a focus on Hakol Tzafui, the things are foreseen. And yet, perhaps because the paradox is only because we think of before versus after, which are limiting descriptions that are not relevant to Kadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge. But what's fascinating is that the Rambam moves on in the end of the Mishnah to focus from what he told us was extraordinary depths of philosophy to Tikkun HaMidos. And the Rambam says in that line at the end of the Mishnah, Hakol will end with this, Hakol fi rov ha-ma'aseh, avalo al-pi ha-ma'aseh, things follow, for the Rambam translates as, some understand this to mean, you know, the majority of how you act. The Rambam says it's the magnitude, it's the quantity of actions. Rambam says, to make a $1,000 donation versus to making $110 donations, there's no comparison. Because he writes, I will be far more profoundly changed by 100 small actions than by one big action. And that's an idea, we'll close with this, a profound idea of Tikkun HaMidos, which he pairs with a profound idea of philosophy and Derech Hashem, which he actually had in the first Mishnah as well. When he spoke on the Dharma Siyag L'Prishus, so he seemed to be clearly talking to this as well, that one needs techniques in Tikkun HaMidos. We talked before how profoundly important it is, that's the middle Mishnah, the Tzelem Elokim, but to accomplish that Tzelem Elokim, one needs not only depth of philosophical understanding, but depth of psychological insight in terms of how to accomplish it, and to develop techniques that will allow me to achieve those heights of Tikkun HaMidos. And here, this critical one is to recognize that I'm shaped by my actions. That's an idea that's famously ascribed to the Sefer HaChinuch correctly, and also here and elsewhere to the Rambam. I'm going to be shaped by action, and I'm going to be shaped by repeated action. That's what Rambam says, to do many, many, many small actions on a regular basis will have a far greater impact than a few great moments. And that is incredibly important. And then he finally wraps his ideas into the mashal, with which he closes the final Mishnah, speaks about Schar V'Onesh, speaks about the possibility of tshuva, it speaks about Bechira Chavshus, it speaks about the fact that part of our Bechira Chavshus, gift Bechira Chavshus, is as often inobvious to us how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world, even while he continues to run it, and that gives us a chance to do the wrong thing, gives a chance to do the right thing, gives a chance to do tshuva, and he closes with the idea of Olam Haba, the ultimate tachlis of it all. Yishkoch.